May it please the Court, my name is Sanford Weisburst and I represent the claimant appellant Antonio Calhoun. The issue in this case is whether the District Court erred in granting summary judgment to the government forfeiting the funds. We ask that although some of the signs may point to unlawful acquisition or accumulation of the funds, there's really... Yes, there is a story, but before I get to it, I just want to point out briefly that it's not the claimant's burden to produce the alternative explanation. It's the government's burden. There are several possibilities. He could have been short. Hopefully not, but yes, Judge Rovner, I believe there are any number of possibilities. He could have been working off the books at a second job and failed to pay taxes, or he could have... Well, we are in a summary judgment posture, however, and I think the question the court needs to answer is whether no reasonable juror could find that there was a lack of a drug connection. Yes, and maybe let me try to go into the alternative story that was put forward mostly in Mr. Calhoun's deposition, which was that he had recently lost his job in the Chicago area. He was considering a move to Chicago, to Phoenix. His cousin had recommended Phoenix to him as a nice place to live. Well, he didn't have a bank account. There's testimony to that effect. And with regard to any number of things, such as the lack of a bank account, the fact that he didn't have he kept it in his apartment. Sure, he didn't have a bank account. That's not disputed. But to go from that fact to an inference that he's a drug dealer is too great a leap. Well, if I can come to the dog for a second, just want to point out a couple of things. One is that at pages 12 and 13 of the government's brief, it concedes that the dog alert was essential to its case. It would not have brought this case without it. And to say that the dog alert has some weight, I think, again, misconstrues the fact that it's the government's burden in this case, and the government has not responded to our citation of the article by Dr. Meslow, which says that it hasn't been proven that methylbenzoate is the odor signature for cocaine. And so there's really no hard scientific proof that would substantiate this dog alert. It's entitled to minuscule, if any, probative weight. And if that is the case, and we don't think the government really has a serious argument in opposition to that, and if, as the government concedes, the dog alert is essential to its case, then we would argue that this case at least has, at the very least, has to be remanded for a trial, if not having summary judgment granted to Calhoun. I'm happy to elaborate a little bit on the dog alert. As I mentioned, the Meslow article states that there's uncertainty in terms of what dogs alert to. The Ninth Circuit, as well as Dr. Meslow, proposed some very easy steps to alleviate that uncertainty. One would be to present the dog with control packages of currency along with the seized funds to ensure that the dog is not simply alerting to money that's in general circulation. Another option would be to train the dogs using methylbenzoate or pseudococaine, which is basically the same as methylbenzoate, which, contrary to street cocaine, is solely consisting of the odor of methylbenzoate, which we concede is an ephemeral chemical that disappears within hours and therefore would be probative of recent exposure to cocaine. Well, I'm operating under that concern, but I would note that he was represented below by a different counsel who no longer represents him. That counsel did clearly raise the argument that, his trial counsel did clearly raise the argument under this court's case by Judge Bauer, which was cited by counsel in the previous case, the $506,000 231 case, that the dog alert's entitled to no weight. He cited and quoted that case. The government didn't come back with anything in opposition to that. So it has been preserved. Now, in terms of whether we're entitled to present additional evidence supporting his view, I believe that we are. We're just presenting some articles that are in the public domain, which Judge Becker of the Third Circuit has said is a question of legislative fact-finding. It's something that an appellate court can do just as easily as a district court, as we state in our reply brief. So, to go back to what the Ninth Circuit has said, it's very easy. Well, the Third Circuit also has said this pretty much the same thing in the $10,700 case, which is that dogs can be trained to alert solely to methylbenzoate, which would solve all of these problems. Another way to solve the problems, which might be even easier, is just to present some control packages of currency. Now, if one looks at how this dog test was conducted, it was conducted in violation of the scientific method. It's just abundantly clear. They have a bunch of containers in their office at Midway Airport. They throw the currency into one of them. There's no control packages whatsoever, and then the dog goes and alerts to it. It doesn't rule out the possibility that the dog is alerting to money that's in general circulation, which it is undisputed contains cocaine contamination, sometimes in significant amounts. And so the dog alert, which the government again concedes is essential to its case, is really not worth anything. If the court doesn't have anything further, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the courts. One of the things counsel mentioned was the Maslow article. And if you actually look at the article and look at his CV that was appended to the reply brief, Dr. Menzel, he has a PhD in public affairs. And the article that he refers to is a survey of the literature, which he refers to in his brief many times. The articles we rely upon at the invitation of this court are articles by Drs. Furton and Rose, who have done extensive research in this area and have definitively concluded that what dogs alert to from cocaine is not the cocaine itself, but it's methylbenzoate that the counsel referred to. Yes, Your Honor. Dogs don't alert to the cocaine hydrochloride, the solid particle of cocaine, but methylbenzoate, which is a byproduct of the illicit manufacture of cocaine. No, Dr. Spurton and Rose have done extensive research on this and have found, one, the quantities of the innocent contamination that makes up this contaminated money theory. One, they're not significant enough, and two, they couldn't be recent enough because methylbenzoate dissipates at a fairly rapid rate on currency that is in general circulation. Recently exposed currency to cocaine, yes. The record at document 19, which is our statement of material facts, includes a box, Smirnoff's box, it's German. It includes his entire performance training log. And in there, all of his training exercises from November of 97 up until the point of this seizure are in there. And he was trained using pseudo-cocaine. There are numerous references to training with pseudo cocaine and other pseudo drugs with this particular dog. By a verification, his. Since he was sort of. According to the performance log, it's in the record. Since his certification in 1997, he has been used to conduct approximately 455 sniff searches. Out of those, 244 times he did not alert at all. He did alert 211 times. Of those 211 alerts, 79 times he found drugs during a training exercise. Of his alerts in the field, 36 times afterwards drugs were found, and 58 times afterwards hidden currency was found. And of these 455 searches, he's only had five that were. Yes, he did have some training exercises with currency. No, it's not in this record. Well, he's not a currency sniffer. He sniffs for five specific types of illegal drugs. I disagree with you. I think that would probably be a good training exercise. On this record, we don't have that. But what we do know is that he does alert to packages and boxes and desk drawers and file drawers that do not contain currency, but do in fact contain drugs. And this is what he has been trained on. well, short trips may not necessarily be the norm, because if you fly down there and it's not ready, you have to wait for your, especially in the Phoenix area, you have to wait for the drugs usually to come up from Mexico, and if they're not there, you have to wait. I find in cases I've worked, that's not that uncommon. But what we have here is a scenario that we put forward at summary judgment based upon all the factors that we learned in discovery, based upon the alert from this trained dog, and Mr. Calhoun came up with his version, and we proved that to be false. It can't be true. Now, a district court was faced with one of two stories, one that had something here, our story, and one that had nothing. And well, there are no factual disputes in this record at summary judgment. In the district court, we filed our Rule 56.1 Statement of Material Facts, with the exception of one, which it wasn't really disputed, but there was some qualification added to it. Mr. Calhoun admitted them all. He admitted every fact we put forward at summary judgment. There is no dispute. If there were additional facts we could have used that we didn't, because they were not in the light most favorable to him, which is what standard that we need to go by at summary judgment. But if you check the record, his response to the 56.1 statement, he admitted all the facts with the exception of one, and then he put a qualifier on, and that had to do with the initial encounter that he never raised as a legal issue throughout the entire proceeding. Well, I suppose in theory it could have, but it wouldn't tell us what we want to know because of this contaminated money theory. If it's tested chemically, it would be done through a chemical wash, and you would find, innocent contamination. Meslow? No, in fact, Mr. Meslow, they state that he says that it hasn't been proven, but they leave out the rest of his statement. They only give us one half of the statement. What he actually said is, although it has not been proven that methylbenzoate is the detector order for cocaine, research does suggest that methylbenzoate may be one of the components of the odor dogs are trained to detect. And he cites a non-Furt and Rose article. Well, what's interesting about Meslow's article is he does cite one Dr. Furt and Dr. Rose article, but it's one of the earlier ones. He doesn't cite the one where they say definitively, and they say in there, we have confirmed the dominant cocaine odor chemical to be methylbenzoate. And that's in our appendix at page 42. Dr. Meslow, in a lot of his, what he even terms are just suggestions in his, he cites his own articles that haven't even been published. He would not qualify as an expert in the area of dog sniffs in the district court under the Dalbert test, because he has no experience in this area. He has no training, and he has no education. He's a PhD in public affairs, a master's in public administration. He's an administrator for a university police department. Well, Mr. Calhoun? No, it doesn't. But there is not one, at least not throughout through my office that I'm aware of. Thank you, Your Honor.
So I'd like to come first of all to question. Mr. Kuhn represented that Box was in fact trained using pseudo-cocaine. I do not know where that is in the record. In fact, it's startling to me that he would say something like that, because in his brief he says there is no such distinction of a dog trained to alert to methylbenzoate versus cocaine. Pseudo-cocaine is methylbenzoate. They're one and the same. He states in his brief that there's no such thing as training a dog using pseudo-cocaine, and yet he says now for the first time that there's something in the record that Box was trained using pseudo-cocaine. I don't see where that is. With regard to Dr. Furton's theory, they may say that we definitively find or we conclude that methylbenzoate is the odor detection signature, but they're one group of scholars, and the same group has written these same few papers and published them maybe three or four times. That does not establish something as a matter of scientific fact. Well, I'm not sure that in fact is the case. Well, let's just disregard Medlow for sake of argument. And a couple of quick points in response to that. One is that Dr. Furton's analysis was recognized as supportive of his theory by the district court in the case cited in our reply brief, but the court went on to say that it's too early in the state of the science to make such a conclusion. Another point is, let's just look for a moment, if I could, and hopefully I can do this within the time that I have left, at the Furton article that's located in Calhoun's appendix, which is from 2002. If you look at pages 63 and 64, let's start with 64, and we look at the second, this is at SA 64 in the separate appendix of Calhoun. If you look at the results that they give, in the test where they ran 1 gram of pure pharmaceutical-grade cocaine, which has hardly any traces of methylbenzoate, you had 4 dogs alerting to it. And this is out of 20 total dogs that they ran in the test. Now, it's the Calhoun's, no, in Calhoun's appendix, yes, at SA 64. In the second row here, the Furton ran a test of 1 gram of pure pharmaceutical-grade cocaine, which has hardly any methylbenzoate, and he had 4 dogs alerted to it. This is out of 20 dogs. Now, that would seem to be somewhat... Now, maybe his evidence on the whole does support his theory, but this runs contrary to it. This says that some dogs, in fact, are going to alert to cocaine that does not have methylbenzoate. I am not a chemist. Yes, it is. I've done my best as a layperson to interpret it. Sure, but shouldn't it be? It should be the government's burden. However, they did not put forward any expert. They did not put forward any expert or article in the district court. I see that my time is up. Is there anything further? Yes, I was. Thank you.
Yes. If you look at document 19, which is our statement of material facts, exhibit O, there's 455 pages of every time to correspond with every time the dog was used, and there'll be marked training, and it'll say pseudo cocaine.